Welcome to Making and Breaking Social Policy, a podcast about how we respond to big social issues and what this means for social and community practice. My name is Ben Lohmeyer, and I'm a lecturer and researcher in social work here at Flinders University. My special guest for this episode is Kitlin Wong. Kitlin is the general manager of Yatala Labour Prison. She's also managed the Adelaide Women's and Mobilong prisons. Kitlin has worked in various roles in government as a social worker, including in child protection and corrections. She has a Master's of Social Work from Flinders University and a grad dip in public sector management. So Kitlin is coming on to chat about social work and critical thinking about policy in the public sector. We recognise that Flinders Social Work operates primarily on the traditional lands and waters of the Kaurna people, and we pay respect to Elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge their sovereignty was never ceded and the continued responsibility to care for country. Kitlin, thank you so much for joining me today for a chat about social work and about critical thinking and about working in the public sector. Really appreciate your time.
No worries, thank you.
So to get us started, you should really start by telling us a little bit about your current job. So you're the general manager of Yatala. What is this job and how did you end up in it?
Okay, so my role at Yatala is to manage both the staff and the prisoners. So underneath me, I have a management team where we manage the site here. And then obviously we have 540 something prisoners and we're in the process of a new build where we're adding 270. So it brings us up to about 843 prisoners at the site here. So wow. It's the largest highest security prison in the state. And we just manage lots of complex prisoners basically. Our role in the prison system in South Australia is to obviously help most of the high security prisoners, most of the prisoners on remand and the prisoners that really can't be placed anywhere. So we have really complex prisons here as well. We also have the high dependency unit where we care for people that have got really acute mental health needs. Yep. So my role is more about legislation, policy, ensuring that we meet those requirements, having the delegation from the chief executive to sign off things for prisoners and for things like that, and also HR requirements around staffing and all sorts of things.
Yeah, great.
Kind of running a business and a big prison that comes along with it. Yeah.
That makes sense. I suppose the really obvious question for me is this a job that you always wanted, or is it something that you kind of ended up in, or how did that happen?
No, it's not a job that I envisioned myself to be. I just ended up here, really. I did social work, my Master's of Social Work at Flinders University when I was in the department, and I was working as a community corrections officer, so not in the prison system. And then I was out there, people that were in the community making sure that they'd report and doing all those things when they're on community-based orders. And then I went on to a management program that the department was offering. And from there, I was managing kind of social workers inside the prisons. And then I got asked to go into a uniform role. And then from there, I obviously progressed up to the general manager position. But yeah, not something I envisioned when I was doing social work.
Yeah, great. I mean, it's not often a job that kind of pops up in high school counselling, career counselling kind of roles. I think you'd be perfect with or those surveys that we complete. So it's always fascinating to hear how people end up in these kind of jobs. And you say you've got a background in social work kind of practice, and then you said you transitioned into a uniform role. Can you just, for those of us who don't know, what's a uniform role? What does that mean?
So our chief executive recently, not recently, about 5 to 10 years ago, multi-classified some of the positions across the prisons. So basically you previously had to be a trained officer to work yourself up through the management ranks into the assistant general manager and general manager. But now you don't have to do that. So you multi-classified them to allow social workers or anyone in the allied health profession to be managers in the prison systems. So to create diversity, obviously. And so when that happened, a lot of people from my background went into those positions where they would have to wear a uniform and manage correctional officers and prisoners on the front line instead of being that social work part where you're managing social work and social workers. So, yeah.
That makes
sense.
That's
what I mean. Yeah. So I put on my uniform for the first time and I'll went and did that. So it was very different managing correctional officers compared to social workers.
I bet it's different. Is there any way you can unpack that a little bit for us? Like, what is it? What does that look like as a day-to-day thing?
I guess they've
got
different roles to play as well. So, you know, a social worker, when we're here, we're, you know, assessing risk. We're doing all those services that a social worker would do in a normal situation like that. But a correctional officer is here for security and also to maintain security as well. So it's about, you know, applying appropriate, you know, like when they have to use force, applying appropriate uses of force, doing security checks and all those kind of things, something that's a little bit different and more black and white than a social work would do in those situations. So, yeah, it's about, you know, the officers unlock the prisoners, you know, they feed the prisoners, they make sure that they're behaving appropriately. They still have that genuine, you know, contact with them and manage them every day, but it's a different kind of contact and relationship than you have with a social worker.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you said that was kind of a recent shift in the way that those roles are classified. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but you're kind of the first person with a social work qualification to hold the position that you're currently in. Is that right?
No. So my predecessor from Yatala Labs, and she was also part of the program. So she had a social work degree too. She's now gone off to a different company. But there's a few of us that have a social work background that are now general managers. So but it's good.
That makes sense. I mean, it's interesting that there's a few of you around now, and you can start to see some of the tensions between, you know, the different kind of priorities that you were describing and roles that they're in. Are there any real benefits that you see to having a social worker in a general manager role?
Definitely. I think the more diverse in your team, the better it is. We come obviously from a human aspect. We look at things differently. You know, we're not just here to lock up prisoners, because we're actually here at our end goal to rehabilitate them. And I think, you know, if you have that in mind and how we get there is easier coming from my background, I think, because that's what our purpose is to be here for. So I think if you have that context, it's easier for me anyway. For people that don't have that, you know, background and haven't had that experience of working with people, it's quite difficult. Yeah. A lot of my social work skills are used on staff, so.
Yeah. Can you tell us any more about that? How does your social work skill come important as a manager?
I guess they teach us, you know, as a social worker, how to communicate with all different types of people and how to approach all different situations. And use different kind of, you know, models and systems to navigate things through. So I guess being it's such a large prison here, we have a large amount of staff. Everyone has different behaviours and everyone are different people. So you're not just managing the prisoners, but managing the staff and their interactions with the prisoners and also with each other. So learning how to communicate with them and having difficult conversations and all those kind of things. My social work has helped degrees help assist with that, I think. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose the other question I'm thinking about is, and this is probably a little bit trickier, are there some tensions between your social work principles and practices and training and the things that you're required to do as a general manager?
Definitely. Yeah. So I guess it's what kind of values and ethics you have as a social worker and then applying them in your everyday job and what you can apply and what you can't. Because obviously there's still rules and legislation and legalities that you can do. So and things that you want to do but you know that you can't do. So, you know, just for instance, if you had a prisoner that is locked up for a certain amount of period of time under separation but you think that he needs this but, you know, you can't facilitate that, It's really getting back to the position, you know, and trying to find the level between, you know, knowing what's right and also what to enact in those situations as well. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does come into question sometimes, yeah. So
sometimes
you get jaded towards the other side where you lose sight of, you know, why you first did social work in the first place, because you're in such a rigid environment all the time. And then when you have conversations with your colleagues that are from the similar background, you're like, oh, yeah, you know, yep. That reminds me, or things like that, or why we're here to do those things. So, yeah.
Yeah, great. Okay, so that sort of community of colleagues and whoever similar sort of background is really important for you in this role as well.
Yeah, because I have two other social workers in my team that work with me. So they always are obviously there and have that aspect of, you know, they actually currently work as a social worker and they're managing the social workers and they're here for, you know, the values and things of the prisoners, which is great. So they also bring in that input. So you can reflect on that when you talk to them, I think.
That makes a lot of sense. One of the things in this podcast that we like to talk about is that sort of tension that we've been discussing between values and practice, but also this nature of the relationship between practice and policy. So we describe it as a relationship of making and breaking. And this is the idea that you can, as a practitioner, which lots of the students who come into social work want to do, they at the end of the day, they want to be in practice rather than necessarily, kind of like we described, imagining themselves in a policy kind of space.
Yep.
But the idea is that we have our industry made by policy. So the policy literally creates opportunities for practice in funding models, or it creates certain services. And so that's making those opportunities. But it can also do the opposite. It can break them. It can force you into a position where you can't follow your values, or it can force you into perhaps you might lose your job if your sector is defunded as a result of policy. That relationship of making and breaking, it seems, is important in your context as well. Is it just in this, the way we describe this podcast?
It's definitely important because obviously I work for the state government, so that's all run by policy and legislation. And the government of the day creates the policy or the outcomes that we want to achieve. So we have to adapt our initiatives or our practice to achieve some of those outcomes. Whether, you know, you think it's the right thing or it's not, if it goes against your values or not, you still have a job to deliver those things, especially in a role like my position. I have a job to deliver those things, whether, you know, you can always view it of how you see it's going to deliver. And obviously when the government wants to deliver, it's probably a good thing anyway. But sometimes it might not align with your values or what you might, you know, think that it's not done appropriately or things like that. I think it's the end goal of how you get there. But your values are always going to be compromised, I think, in any job that you're in, because you're never going to find a position that meets your values to the T or to your core. Yeah, you're only gonna have to find parts of that, and then you hold on to those things, I think, and then obviously do your job when you need to do your job.
That's a really important point. Yeah, thank you. I think the idea that there's some abstract job out there that completely fulfills every value is probably highly unrealistic, but that you might have to always work in a tension space. It's always grey. You're always kind of working with it is really important. That's the other kind of half to the making and breaking story as well, I think, is that in practice, we make policies in the sense of we enact them the way they're intended, or you can, and this sounds rebellious, but we can break them in the sense of how you implement might resist, or you might do some advocacy, or you might push back against the policy. And then that relationship of conversation and making and breaking is kind of ongoing as well.
Well, I guess everything that we do relates to policy. So, questioning the policy, you can do that in positions or changing it. Definitely you can do that and challenge it. But then you still at the end of the day, you have to deliver the policy regardless of what that might be. But you can have impact into that of how the policy is developed to change that. Yeah. Yep.
Do you have many opportunities for that kind of work in your role in terms of developing policy or advocating for change? Is that something that fits within your job as well?
Yeah, yep. So I'm responsible for all the local operating procedures in this prison. So we review them on a regular basis. Obviously, everything relates back to the Correctional Services Act. So the changes and amendments in that have to go through Parliament. But even when our central office develops the policies, we have input in this position to, change or what that would look like and all those kind of things. So we give feedback in regards to those policy changes and what that would look like, because at the end of the day, we have to enact those policies. So you have to have the end user involved in the discussions before creating the policy, which we do very well here.
Yeah, great. Are there processes in place to do that sort of consultation with end users when there's a developing policy or procedure?
Yeah, yep. So we have a robust consultation process. So usually, obviously, the policy will be developed and looked at by our chief executive and executive team. And then it'll be pushed down to the general managers. And then after we've developed the policy, then we would develop a local operating procedure and how we would enact that at our site. And that would involve consultation with our representatives, our staff representatives, of how that would look like. And so that forms the part of the consultation process until we enact it.
That's great. Thank you. Here's a kind of tricky question. Do you have a way to consult with you, not just your end users and your staff, but the clients, if you like, for another word, the prisoners? Is there a way that they have input into policies and procedures?
Yeah, so if the policy impacts the prisoners, that we have prisoner needs meetings. So recently, well, in 2019, we brought in smoke-free in our prisons. So that was a legislation change that the government decided to do to make all prisons smoke-free. So we had a lot of interaction with the prisoners of how this would look like for them, because obviously we're taking something away from them. And smoking is a lot of a stressor, you know, ease for a lot of them. So we had regular meetings with them. We provide updates through a prisoner tech system that we have, which is like a digital system which provides newsletters and things like that. We had a lot of education sessions for them, all those kind of things that we do to relay information to them so they have input of how they could, you know, enact or help with this policy change, because they're one of our big stakeholders, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you. I was just really fascinated with how that would work in a prison setting, because obviously there's this idea in social work that we should have people with lived experience and their voices be included in consultation, and just thinking about how that works in your environment. So, but you have a process. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Most major changes that we have here, we do include them.
That's great. The other thing I was really interested in about what you're saying, and highlighted another thing that we talk about in this podcast and with students studying social work and studying social policy, is the different kind of levels and layers of policy that exist within these environments. So you have legislation from the government at the top, and then their policies might be dependent on their party, but then you have procedures and policy within your workplace as well, and they all relate, but they're different levels.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they are, because the people on the ground, obviously, you know, we're the ones that are, you know, doing the legislation. So it's all different. So, you know, the policy is the overarching thing that we work on, but then we have to bring it down to the ground level of how we, you know, contribute to that policy or enact it.
That's fantastic. Thank you. So the last kind of question I thought I'd ask you about is this idea that exists in social work students, is that this policy context, that this idea of working with policy, it's actually kind of really unpopular with students. Yeah, they come into the topic and they often think the topic is going to be fairly boring or irrelevant. They find it intimidating. And then maybe, you know, the question whether this is really what social workers do, but it's what you do, and you've got other social workers that work with you. And I was interested in how the things that you've learned in social work, how perhaps the critical thinking skills or the more broad kind of understanding of social problems and social systems, how that influences that work that you do with policy?
I think having an understanding of, you know, social work systems and all those things that we do as a social worker can help determine policy and make sure, you know, that we're working towards what we want to deliver for our own personal values and professional values. I think it obviously contributes that everything starts from policy. Like, it needs to be written down, and that's where policy comes from. And we can't do anything unless it's written down or enacted. So I was the same. I didn't think that I wasn't a person that's like, oh, I'm doing social work to do policy. But now I'm in a position where I deliver policy. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, so I think policy's in every single job that we do. We just need to relate it back somehow and understand how we can, you know, make those changes or how we have those views of things, I think. Yeah, I don't know if that's the right answer.
It is absolutely, and I'm really interested, particularly in the last bit that you said of, you know, how do we trace it back? How do we understand where we get these views from? And one of the things that we talk about again in this podcast and in our topic is how we understand the problem that we're solving with a policy. You know, like you said, everything comes back to policy, but underpinning that policy is an understanding of what it is we're actually fixing. You know, what's this policy for? And I suppose what we're trying to do in many ways in this topic is to try and help students to really think critically about that problem, how it's represented. And I was wondering whether there's a way or some principles or ideas that you just regularly bring to that conversation. You know, they sit at the back of your mind or in the front of your mind, and every time someone says, we're going to review this policy, you go, okay, I've got my little checklist. These are the things I'm going to bring to it that help you think critically about policy.
Yeah, I guess it relates back to, you know, I think sometimes when I think about policy and what we're going to deliver is how it impacts other people and how why we're here in the first place. So our department's obviously here to, you know, accommodate prisoners, but we're not here to punish them and we're here to rehabilitate them. So how would this impact them in the long run? You know, I'm here to make that difference to every single life because these people are going to be released into the community. So when reading the policy, how is that going to impact them and how is that going to contribute to them?
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I guess it's remembering why you're doing the job in the first place, I think, and that's important for your values. And that's why you keep getting up each day to do the job. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because I imagine people could find it really hard to imagine doing your job, not just because it's a policy job, but because it's a prison job. And you know, what's the motivation for you to get up and do that every day? So that's fascinating to hear that you're going back to your core motivation. You know, what are you hoping to support and help people to do? And or another way of framing that, and again in the language that we like to use here, is, you know, it represents the problem in really different ways. Often people think about, you know, prisons or even justice systems more broadly as being about punishment. You know, you do something wrong, you get punished. But you're saying, no, the problem is actually, how do we rehabilitate people? How do we help them back into a place where they can get back into the community and function well? They're really different understandings of the problem that's underpinning your policy, I think.
Correct. Like, obviously, the courts make the determination. They're the ones that set down the punishment or the sentence. Where they get sent to prison, and then we're here to obviously help them become productive members of society and proactive members of society, and how we do that, that our policy should be around that.
That makes so much sense. Thank you so much. Really appreciate the chat. I think you've given us some incredible insights into, you know, what it means to work in a prison, what it means to be a social worker, what it means to work with policy. I think people would be really interested to kind of see your role or ask you more questions or kind of follow the kind of work that you do. If they wanted to, what's the best way to kind of get in contact with you or follow along with your work?
I'm on LinkedIn. That's my name. And I think my email and everything's on there as well. So, yeah, they can contact me through that.
Brilliant. All right. Well, we'll put a link in the show note to your LinkedIn account, and that'll be excellent. Look, I really appreciate the time. I know you're super busy, and we've had a bit of fun trying to set up this time in terms of being a bit of email tennis. So, again, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No worries.
This episode was edited by Ryan Manhire, music by Anthem of Rain, sourced from the freemusicarchive.org. You can find me, Ben, on Twitter @LohmeyerBen. If you like the podcast, please like, share, comment, and do all the things.